The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Happy Valentine's Day, but what good is Valentine's Day if you're still out in the wilderness looking for that love connection? And today, in this modern age of hyperconnectivity, we are blessed, and some say maybe cursed, with being able to look for love online. The good news is there are so many options. The bad news is there are so many options. The good news is the old rule book has been thrown out. The bad news is there are no rules. I hear it's tough to be dating out there in the digital age. Tell us what you are experiencing if you've found loss or love online. Give us a call. You can get into our conversation by calling 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org, and you can tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour with Helen Fisher, an anthropologist, senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, chief scientific advisor for the internet dating site Match.com. Reuben Thomas is with us. He's a sociologist from the University of New Mexico, and Jordana Abraham is a co-host of the dating advice podcast, You Up. So we got some experts here. Helen Fisher, what's it like out there?
Well, I think it's actually a lot easier than it used to be. I mean, I'm quite a bit older, and I'm too old to stand in a bar and wait for the perfect boy to come along. I mean, there's a great many options. The problem with internet dating, and it's not internet, it's internet introducing. These are introducing sites. The only real algorithm is your own brain. You've got to go out and meet the people. We can give you an array of people, but you've got to go out and meet them. But the real problem is it's modern technology, and people really haven't learned how to use it. The brain is not well built to pick between more than about 9 people. So the one thing, if you're going to date today, and certainly the internet has been a very successful way to do it, the thing to do would be to, after you've met 9 people, stop and get to know one or more of them better. The brain is very well built to begin to assess people after meeting them a few times. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to learn how to use this technology. The technology in itself is good, but you've got to learn how to use it.
And Reuben Thomas, this technology, is it more suited to certain demographics than others? Does this leave other people out of the algorithm?
There is a concern that there could be a digital divide, but when you look at what couples actually meet online, the demographic that uses it the most is people in their 30s to 40s for actually forming long-term relationships. Though I think a lot of the people who use the dating sites are in their 20s, it's just maybe not producing as many relationships among that demographic.
So, well, in the 20s, they're not dating at all, I hear.
Oh, I think they're dating online. I just think there's so many other opportunities in their everyday lives to find partners that online isn't making as big of an impact on the long-term relationships of people in their late teens and 20s. It's the people in early middle age who are maybe surrounded by networks and work through family, through friends that don't have as many eligible single people who'd be right for them, who are finding a lot more success online than offline.
And Jordana Abraham, with your podcast, You Up, you hear a lot of, I guess, horror stories from people about dating online, maybe a lot of success stories. What are people talking about?
Dating today is just like, it's totally different than we think of dating in our parents' generation. So there's not necessarily a lot of older role models who have dealt with dating the way that younger millennials are doing it. So like, for instance, we get emails from people who are saying, what does it mean if someone is texting me or someone is not texting me, but they're looking at my Instagram story? And that's not something that your mom can really answer. So it's a very different technological world. There's a lot more to interpret. There's a lot more ways to contact someone. It used to be that you had to call them up on the phone if you wanted to see someone. Now there's so many signs where people can show like sort of pseudo interest. And it's a little bit harder to decipher all the different clues.
but there are different types of sites. I mean, it's not just a broad one site for everybody. People can sort of self-select by deciding they're going to go to the gluten-free connection versus any other site, Jordana?
Yeah, I mean, we just started a dating app of our own with Match Group. It's called Ship, and that allows your friends to find matches for you, which we think brings more of the social fun aspect back to dating, because a lot of the people that we speak to feel kind of isolated with dating. They feel like they're doing the same thing over and over again. It's sort of a game, and this really makes it more fun. It sort of mimics that experience of going to a bar with your friends, and if you meet someone, it's great, and if you don't, that's okay too, because you're having a good time.
It sounds like you're bringing back blind dating to the online world.
Well, we're bringing back more setups to the online world or the feeling that you're doing something as a village, and you can trust you can trust that you're going to have fun with your friends, and your friends are going to want to find you a good date.
All right, let's go to the phones. 210-614-8980. Diana, and Diana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I just wanted to let you know I actually had a really good experience. I was widowed in my late 40s, and so I did online dating for a number of years, and in May we will be celebrating our first anniversary. Late in life, I've met someone, we fell in love and got married. Now, I met him through a senior dating site, and I actually found I had a lot more success on that site than on some of the others that are not as restrictive on age. But yeah, so I had a happy ending to my online dating.
And how's your Valentine's Day looking like?
Oh, it's wonderful. He left flowers and chocolates for me this morning, and I'm fixing a special dinner for him tonight.
All right. So. Well, it sounds like you got it locked in. That's a success story, Helen Fisher.
In fact, at Match, we study every year. We ask the question, where did you meet your last first date? And 41% this past year met their last first date online. And only, I think, 14 to 16% met somebody through a friend. And only 6% met in a bar. So it does seem to be, particularly for older people like Diana, I'm sure she already knows everybody in her social group and in her business meetings, et cetera. And it's just the newest way to do the same old thing, is just to find somebody. And, you know, the brain is well built to fall in love at any age. So one thing I wanted to follow up on what Ruben said was very interesting, that, yes, no question about it, it is the middle-aged people who are looking, using online more. But there's also special groups, like, for example, the gay and the lesbian groups, where they have a very difficult time finding people in their regular daily life and are finding it much easier to go online. And there's new sites like, something, I don't know, it's farmer.com or these other one that Jordana said, that we're going to see more and more boutique sites, and we're going to see more friends helping you look for a partner. And that's adaptive. Those are old mechanisms that were done millions of years ago. You had friends helping and family helping and a certain social group that was helping you, and that's what this online dating is providing.
So no more Barbara Streisand matchmaker. We now have the apps doing it for us.
You've got to do the work yourself, though, of course. And
okay.
You've got to get out there and meet the people.
All right. Do you have a question or a comment or a story to tell us about dating in the digital age? Have you used online dating sites or apps, and how did it go? Did you meet your significant other online? We want to hear your stories. Call in. Number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about love and dating in the digital age. The species depends on making that love connection. Call in, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about dating in the digital age, and I'm flying blind here. I definitely need some support from the callers to help us understand what's going on out there, because it's all new to me. was able to fall in love the old-fashioned way, the way Hall & Oates told me to do it. And so, mm-hmm. but that didn't exist at the time. So what's happening now? What can you tell us? How do you think it should be refined so that we get better results and we can tackle some of the nagging issues that seem to be hanging some people up? And why did the stigma behind online dating, why did that go away? Now it's typical. It's a social, it's a social norm almost. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Tracy is on the line. And hi, Tracy. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you. I think that it needs to be like the way it was when I met my husband, and it was a singles group, and you could get together with people and go out and play golf or go out and go dancing. You didn't have to just meet one person. You could meet multiple people. So I joined at that 17 years ago, and we've been married for 16 years.
All right. Well, that worked for you. Tracy, thanks for that. Reuben Thomas, a singles group, that's one way of doing it.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about the internet is that it has moved people so far away from finding partners through their friends or through their family or through their neighborhood or through these kinds of settings where there's other people involved, and made it much more of a one-on-one enterprise. And so that's the really big shift that I think we've seen, that's really unprecedented, is how much this looking for a partner in those early stages of the relationship has become kind of this individual quest, which is both very freeing, but also puts a lot of stress on the individual.
What are we actually doing when we are out there looking for that special someone? We're all doing sorting and judging and gauging and looking for, is it a subconscious type of process, or do we all have little boxes that we're ticking off, Reuben Thomas?
Oh, I think people definitely have preferences and that they go into these situations with. But what's really changed is that the situations one would go into have really changed in their composition and their scale. So in, say, like the early 20th century, it might be that a brother would bring a potential suitor over for a family dinner, and they might do this a few times, and those potential suitors, kind of pre-screened by the family, would be the ones that would be selected from, and the family would be very involved. And then in the mid to late 20th century, there was a shift towards more introductions through friends, but there was still this kind of pre-screening by the friends, so there was more of a collective effort in deciding who would be acceptable. And now, shifting into this century, we are seeing much more of people going online and encountering pretty much everybody in their metropolitan area who's signing up for online dating, which can be a vast pool of people. And there, they have to do the sorting and the preference selection more by themselves than ever before.
Helen Fisher, you're the author of Anatomy of Love, A Natural History of Mating, Marriage, and Why We Stray. Is it more difficult now, easier now, to find that a real solid, lasting relationship?
In some respects, I think it's easier. I mean, 100 years ago, if your partner died in your late 20s or early 30s, it was unlikely that you were going to be able to find somebody again. And just like Reuben said, I mean, you know, we're lacking community now to help us do it, no question about it. But these internet introducing sites are giving us a new community. And I know that on Match, they have something like 80 different meetup things in various cities, so that you do go to a group of people and you might make just friends and with people. So I just think there's an awful lot of ways to do it these days. And I think that one thing that's important to remember is that, I mean, I've been reading Jane Austen and Trollope and people like that. In those days, you had to marry somebody of a certain class, a certain background, a certain amount of money, a certain amount of social status, a person who, you know, was part of your religious persuasions, etc. All of that has been lifted. We are, no question about it, having to do the job ourselves. But we get have a larger array of people, and we have more opportunities to meet them. In many respects, I'm very optimistic about it today. It's different, and it's got its own problems, but it's got some tremendous opportunities.
210-614-8980. You can call in, join our conversation as we talk about dating in the digital age. Jonathan has called in. And Jonathan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to see if you wouldn't mind talking about the different types of love that have existed in different cultures. I know Greeks had several words for different types of love. There was like the love of the family and then like your love of your significant other. I think there was even one for like the love of your country and self-love. And I just didn't know. I don't know how many Americans actually know about that, and maybe even thinking that way might help them feel like not as lonely today if it's Valentine's Day, stuff like that. So,
well, Jonathan, great point. Thanks for that. Helen Fisher?
Yeah, he's got a great point. I mean, there's basically six different kinds of love that the ancient Greeks described. But actually, I think it boils down to three different brain systems. I think we've evolved three distinctly different brain systems for mating and reproduction. One is the sex drive, craving for sexual gratification. The second is intense feelings of romantic love. And the third is feelings of deep attachment. And you can feel deep attachment for your country and certainly deep attachment for various relatives and friends and intense feelings of romantic love for somebody else. So actually, in one of my books, I look at those six ancient Greek aspects of love. And maybe there's Eros, there's Ludus, there's... I can't remember them. Maybe Ruben or Jordan will remember them. But bottom line is it boils down to certain brain systems. And from one country to the next, you read poetry from around the world, and you'll see Shakespeare's poetry actually has a great deal of discussion of attachment to somebody. I love you as a summer day, whereas some American Indians have intensely romantic poetry. But around the world, we feel these three basic brain systems and attach them to all kinds of focus, to the love of God, to the love of family, to the love of community or nation, and certainly to the love of children. And that's really quite different from that intense feeling of romantic love for a reproductive partner.
Yeah, reproductive partner. We're looking there's a lot of sex going on here. That's the underlying thing, whereas people are looking for frequently, they're looking for a partner. Jordana Abraham, in your podcast, a dating advice podcast, You Up, people are misrepresenting themselves online at times to try to have the sexiest presentation. Is that an issue?
It can be an issue. I think that we often, and we do a lot of like dating app makeovers and things like that. And a lot of the times we find with women that they're not being confident putting their true self forward. So they're either hiding behind a friend or they're wearing sunglasses. And with men, it's like the opposite issue. They're trying too hard to be super macho and to picture with themselves with a fishing rod or a tiger. And it's like they...
With a tiger?
Yeah, sometimes people are taking pictures with a tiger and they're traveling. Or
well, if your
like
name's
that.
Calvin, I don't think it really works. But question, how much skin can you show in those photographs? Like, you know, if you're a man, do you take off your shirt or how does that work?
I think it depends what you're looking for. I think if you're looking for a sexual relationship, which is totally fine, then you should lead with sex. And I think if you're looking for something more serious and long term, it's important to kind of show your personality and show other things so that you attract suitors who are looking for the same thing.
So be upfront and honest about what you're on that app for.
Definitely.
And that's just for your benefit and everyone else's.
Exactly, because then you're not wasting anyone's time if you're showing your real self and someone can choose to like you and choose to not. And sometimes I think people in their head think, oh, like if I misrepresent myself, when I meet them in person, they'll love me and they won't mind. But I think it's always best to lead with your confidence. You're always going to find a match, and there's always someone out there for everyone.
Ruben Thomas, with a sociologist at the University of New Mexico, are there people looking at how truthful are these profiles that people post on these sites? How close to life they actually are in reality?
There is an area of research on that. It's not entirely clear whether or not people are misrepresenting themselves any more than they did in the past, say in a singles bar or on like a pre-internet kind of video dating or classified ad site. But I think the disconnect from having friends and family vouch for someone definitely opens up the possibility for more deception than existed before. You know, it's hard to lie about who you are when it's your friend's friend who you're going on the date with, and they can just tell that person, no, this person's not really 6 foot tall, this person's 5'5". But there's also the issue of people maybe lying to themselves about who they are in their profiles, because the profiles they make and the pictures they take are kind of a, you know, construction of their own identity through their eyes. And sometimes it doesn't always match up with what other people see when they meet face to face. So people can feel misled by a profile, even when there was no intention of misleading.
So someone can see themselves as Mr. Excitement, and actually they're pretty dull.
Exactly.
And so Helen Fisher, is this part of the process of us learning how to navigate these systems?
Oh, absolutely. You know, just to follow up on that, I've watched 40,000 people lie to me. I mean, you know, men tend to lie about their height and how much money they make, and women lie about their weight and their age. And from a Darwinian perspective, you know, the game of love, I hate to say this, is not about honesty. It's about winning. And people will do all kinds of things in order to win. But, of course, this is the reason to get right out there and meet the person as soon as possible. As Ruben said, if you don't have the family and friends around to check on who you are, et cetera, you're doing all the advertising yourself. You're a walking billboard of who you are, and you've got to be honest with it, because people are very good at taking a look at you and saying, you know, I don't think you're 6'3". You're 5'5".
And so what the game of love, and it's about winning. What does winning look like in the game of love, Helen?
Well, you know, you're trying to win life's greatest prize, which is a mating partner. I mean, you know, the basic brain regions for romantic love lie down in the base of the brain, right near factories that orchestrate thirst and hunger. Thirst and hunger keep you alive today. Romantic love motivates you to find a partner and pass your DNA into tomorrow. And so you're trying to win life's greatest prize. And throughout the animal community, I mean, look at a peacock. Evolved all those tail feathers. They're hard to cart around. They're there only to impress. I mean, we have evolved all kinds of mechanisms to try to win at the mating game, because it is so important to the future of ourselves and even of humanity.
And so we're looking for someone that I respect and I admire, and we can work together as a team, but also keep our individuality and our identity, come together and support each other and at critical times. And so Jordana Abraham, that's a lot to ask for.
Yeah, and I think that it definitely is a lot to ask for. And I think the trend, at least what I see from reading emails and doing this podcast, is that people wanted to get married and then create their life and figure out who they are. And now they kind of want to figure out who they are. And then when all the figuring out is done, then they're ready to get married. So you see people who are looking to settle down later, who are looking to self-actualize on their own instead of sort of going through that journey with someone, which is definitely a big change.
Right. And so with this digital age, we have options, we have choices, we have freedom online. And there is this thing called the tyranny of choice, where you have so many choices, you don't know what to do and you're frozen in place. Does that happen, Ruben Thomas?
Oh, I definitely believe it happens. I want to get back to something that Jordana said about self-actualization, which I think is kind of key to why people confront themselves with this tyranny of choice, rather than relying upon their friends, which one could still do to find a partner. But I think one thing we've seen over the course of the past 100 years in U.S. history and other places around the world is this shift from romance and marriage as something that is, to some extent, strategic, and the shift from an idea of family and marriage as something one sacrifices for, to an idea that your marriage should be a vehicle for your self-actualization and becoming the full you that you could become and becoming fulfilled and satisfied in your life. It's kind of an identity quest. And I think that's partly why people are moving towards doing this on their own more than they did before. But that means getting outside of the norm or comfort zone and confronting a lot more options.
Finding some answers about who you are, what you're looking for, what makes you happy. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about ghosting online. Why do some people ghost and how you can get over it? And you can call in with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues on this Valentine's Day. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about dating in the digital age. The number to call in to join the conversation is 210-614-8980. Frequently, you might meet someone online or in person, and you get things are just clicking. You're just moving along, and it's like, wow, I really found someone exciting. I dig them. They dig me. But then you hit a wall. They just stop returning your text messages. They don't respond. It's just something just happened, and you're just out and wondering, like, what happened? Adam Popescu writes about that. He's a novelist, journalist. His recent piece in the New York Times is titled Why People Ghost and How to Get Over It. Adam, welcome to The Source. What is ghosting?
Well, David, thanks for having me, first off. Ghosting is something I think that has many connotations to many different people. But in the context of today, of Valentine's Day, we're talking about a romantic ghosting, and that means it's someone who you communicate with, let's say via text or online, just basically eliminates you from their life and just disappears like a ghost.
And they just act like no response. They're just not even going to give you an explanation for why.
Well, it's easy, right? If I can find a mate via my phone and browse through digital profiles on Tinder or any other service with the flip of my finger, well, if something is uncomfortable emotionally, why am I just not respond? And I think that's what the phenomenon we're talking about here is and how pervasive it is, because if it's that easy to initiate sex or romance or a partner, it's also that easy to just eliminate them and walk away without encumbering the difficulty of breaking up or saying you don't want them. They just leave and ghost.
So it seems like a really cold, heartless form of rejection can actually be very painful.
Totally, totally. Is it, not to be too personal, but has it happened to you before?
Everything's happened to me before.
Okay, so then you know what we're talking about. I mean, I think everyone has had this in some respect or another.
Yeah, so it's just not knowing if you did something or circumstances changed beyond your control, being the person, you were invested in this relationship, you had hopes, and you're wondering, questioning, like, was I mistaken, or did I do something wrong, or, you know, what could have happened, or did they suddenly move to another planet? I have no idea.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, I think we all want closure. We want to know if we made a mistake, what we did wrong, to then take it to the next relationship, the next person. And without getting that, you're left feeling sort of shaken, I think. A lot of people are left feeling, what's wrong with me that I didn't even deserve to be told off in person or told off at all?
And so, of course, it's a form of cowardice because a person doesn't have the courage to stand up and say, I don't think this is working out, and they don't have to want to offer an explanation. But is it socially accepted to do something like this?
Well, I think a lot of things that are maybe 2 to 5, even 10 years ago that would once have been strange are now much more normal in terms of dating online, for instance, or maybe even having multiple partners. And so I think it is become, in a way, socially more acceptable. But I think intimacy is being affected by it. And I think if you are not being open, if you're not allowing yourself to open up to your partner, no matter what relationship, no matter if it's a friend or a loved one, the relationship suffers and it goes to the next one because you're sort of practicing bad habits. So I think, you know, it's something that beyond just a Valentine's Day thing or beyond just, you know, talking about love, I think it's important. I think it impacts a lot of our behavior.
So what can you do? So people are going to be, this is one reason why people are reluctant to get into this world, because you become a disposable commodity. Once someone has experienced you and used you, now they're just maybe can cast you to the side. So what can people do to protect themselves?
Well, I think one of the best things to do is to be honest. And I think that means if you're not interested in someone or if you don't want to do something, it's best to just say that. And it might be difficult to be that honest and to be real, especially because we can just duck back into our digital cocoon and not respond. But for the other party and for yourself, you have, like I said, some closure, and it's more, you know, defined. And I talked to some researchers for this, and they said, don't apologize, but set boundaries. And that way you don't have to ghost. You can be upfront, and it's, you know, we want to bond. We're wired to bond, as some of your guests have said, but taking a risk about how you feel, it has benefits.
Yeah, I've had people, someone ghost me one time, and then years later, their resume turned up in a stack of someone who wanted a job, and it didn't get very far. So you never know, you know, where these relationships will lead if you ghost somebody, with that, you know, if that person's going to be an ally or what.
It's bad manners. It's just off top, basically.
Let's go to the phones, 210-614-8980 with Chris. Hey, Chris, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just wanted to shed some light on the LGBT aspect of dating in the digital age. I know there's a lot of apps out there, and for straight couples, generally Tinder is, I've noticed, where you go to hook up. But for the gay world, if you're on Tinder, that's generally where you're looking for something a little bit more serious. I know for gay people, Grindr is the hookup app, and it seems that Bumble seems to be, for straight people, the more serious place to go. So there's all these apps that are out there, and you kind of have to know what you want and where to maneuver from. And it can be a little intimidating at times if you don't know what you're getting into when you first get into it.
All right, Chris, thank you for that call and that insight. Jordana Abraham, a co-host of the Dating Advice Podcast, You Up. Seems like there's some sort of code to each of these types of dating sites. Is there a master key out there that will explain what I'm getting into? I mean, if you don't know, I mean, you're just maybe a guy and you sign up for Grindr because you have no idea. Well, that could be an interesting episode.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any app where you can, where there's no case of anyone finding a whole range of you know, whether they're just there to hook up or looking for a real relationship. I think there are ones that are more geared towards finding a serious relationship or more geared towards a certain kind of person. And I think that, yeah, it's definitely like helpful as a person to do a little research about like what the or even just try them out just to see like what are the kind of messages that people are sending. What kind of information is the app trying to highlight in a person? If it seems more like you're swiping left or right, it might be that's not for you. If you're looking for a more like nuanced experience where you find out someone's likes and dislikes, there's like Hinge, which has a lot of prompts like that. Or if you're intimidated by dating and you want to bring your friends into it, you could try Ship, where you have your friends there with you, and so it feels less lonely and less isolating. I really do think, again, as time goes on, dating apps are relatively new in the grand scheme of dating. And so I think it's only going to get better. There's only going to be more specific types of apps, and there's going to be more places where people can feel comfortable like getting into the online dating community.
So Adam Popescu, with you writing about ghosting and how to get over it. So how do you get over it?
I think you have to sort of talk yourself down in terms of, it's easy to feel bad about yourself online when you look at everyone sharing a glorified version of themselves or a really filtered version of themselves. And you have to remember your self-worth or what's important. So I think for everyone that can be a different challenge, but putting into perspective and realizing that if someone treats you poorly, no matter what aspect of your life that is, that's not the right person to have around you.
So you should just count it as a benefit that this person is no longer going to be part of your life.
Well, maybe they're revealing their true colors early, and maybe that's someone you shouldn't chase after.
And so ghosting is a term. I'm hearing about zombies as well. Do you know what that is?
Zombies. Give me a brief rundown.
Like an online zombie, like they ghosted you and then they kind of come back and then they pull back and then they're sort of like, they never complete. It's like, how can I miss you if you never go away? They ghost you, but then suddenly they got these weird likes coming from them.
I think those are the worst. I think those are the worst because you never quite even know, am I suddenly cool enough for them? Do they need something from me? I find that to be equally, if not worse, in terms of frustration level.
Helen Fisher, as you chart all this as an anthropologist, Are you, do you look at the language that evolves through this new technology and love?
Yes, I do, and I'm just fascinated with it. They, you know, today people are really defining things. And by the way, this what you just discussed there is called breadcrumbing. You know, the zombie comes back out of nowhere, and then you just keep them around. I mean, they try to keep you around by just throwing you little likes on your Facebook or whatever. So they're just breadcrumbing. You're just keeping you around in the background so they can jump back in, you know, with you if they want to. But I'd like to say a couple other things about ghosting. I studied, you know, I and my colleagues put people in brain scanners, and we did a study of people who had been rejected in love. And when you've been dumped or just somebody's just disappeared, there's a part of the brain that becomes active that is associated with figuring out your gains and your losses. So the brain is very well built to say, what happened here? What did I do? What did I do wrong? And, you know, did I lose time? Did I lose money? Did I lose self-esteem? You're just trying to figure it out. So it's very natural to be wondering what went on. And it happened to me one time, and I finally decided I had no idea what happened. And I finally decided, okay, Helen, make up a story. Because once you've made up a story that makes any sense to you, then you can get rid of it. So that's one little tip that I did. But one of the things that I think is really important here is that this, as everybody's been saying here, is new technology. And I think we are developing taboos, not rules on how to behave, but taboos. And even this discussion now, we're beginning to build a taboo of what's appropriate behavior on the Internet and what really isn't. And down the road, I think that we're going to come to understand, really as a culture, that ghosting is...
So the new rules are being crafted as we go along. We're going to be right back, taking a break. If you wanted to join our conversation, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this quick break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about dating in the digital age, all of those apps and programs and ways to swipe right, swipe left, try to make that love connection, meet someone online, and find out if that could be your or Mr. or Mrs. Miss Perfect. Call in 210-614-8980. What about personal safety when it comes to using these programs? People are wondering if I'm going to find that perfect stalker that I've been trying to avoid my entire life. Ruben Thomas, sociologist at the University of New Mexico, is this way of meeting people any more or less safe than before?
It's not clear that it's safe, but there definitely was a perception that it was very unsafe. Now, as more and more people are meeting online, a lot of that perception has changed, both the stigma about meeting online as well as the fear of safety. About 2 out of 5 of the couples who met in the past years so met through online dating. And so it's seen as less exotic. But whenever you meet a stranger, there's always danger, whether the stranger's being met in someone on a bar or somebody at a beach or a park. So there's always a danger, but there might be more of a kind of fear of others meeting through the Internet because it's a new technology.
And Jordana Abraham, what are some do's and don'ts for maintaining personal safety?
Definitely important to be smart, to meet up in a public place. I like to do a little Google of the person. just to make sure you don't get anything too crazy. But it's important to leave a little bit of mystery. And again, like Adam was saying, like there's always been issues of safety concerning dating. And I think the Internet is no different than meeting someone at a bar and then going on a date with them. Just making sure that, you know, you let people know where you're going and that you're going somewhere public and that you don't go anywhere too private with someone that you don't know too well yet.
Helen Fisher, there have been studies that show that online dating lowers self-esteem and increases depression. What do you think is behind that?
I don't know. I don't study this. Maybe it's, you know, fear of missing out. You hear of other people finding love and you don't have it. And I mean, you know, it does take some work on online dating, and you are likely to get people who ghost you or breadcrumb you or zombie you. And so,
you know, nobody gets out of love alive. I don't know if self-esteem really has gone down. There were many times during human evolution where women's self-esteem was very low, where they didn't get an education, et cetera. So I'm leery of data that I'd have to read the academic literature to find out. Maybe Ruben knows, he's a sociologist. You know what they're comparing this depression with? Are they comparing it with 100 years ago or right before online dating started? I'd like to know myself.
Well, there's the research is showing that there's this presentation anxiety online, in which they're very there's a lot of concern, particularly about body image. Ruben Thomas. Mm-hmm.
I would be skeptical of that as well. I'm not sure which exact study I'd have to look at it, but I think that dating in general causes anxiety and causes body image issues. And so I think with, you know, comparing the dating experience online with, say, the dating experience of going to singles bars, doing speed dating or other kinds of offline searches for love, if you did a really fair comparison, you might not find much of a difference in how stressful that can be. It's certainly more work, perhaps, and it's more of a focused search than the kind of searches for love that are part of other social activities.
And so, Jordana Abraham, I mean, when we look at online meeting and dating, should we consider this as an option, not the only way that people are actually going to meet each other and make that connection?
You're saying, are there other ways that people are still meeting?
Yeah, there's still plenty of other ways. You never know where you're going to meet that special somebody.
For sure, yeah. I mean, a lot of people, I've met someone, you know, like being set up, people are still going out and doing things and interacting. I think online dating just makes it easier to find people and meet people that you would have never met before, especially people that if you have a certain group, the older you get, the less you're kind of meeting new people organically. And so this really just helps like expand your circle and meet people that otherwise would have been, you know, you'd never would have come across.
So on your profile picture, you know, you've taken a really good picture of you. It's actually you. It's not somebody else. It's a good day. It's not you from 20 years ago. And so it's a pretty good representation of what you look like. And then you have to put in, I guess, your little bio of some sort. And you have to do what? Are there some rules of what you shouldn't do? Should I use proper English and punctuation and complete sentences? Or should I use, what do I do, Jordana?
I think just like with the pictures, it's important to put out an authentic version of yourself. So, I mean, if you're not someone who has good grammar, then that's going to come through. But then the person that you're going to find a match with is not going to care about that. So I think more than anything else, there's no real rules. It's just kind of being yourself and putting yourself out there. And I think a lot of people who are frustrated with the apps are not really using them correctly in that they're kind of half on them. They don't really want to be there. And so they're not really putting themselves out there. They're maybe like putting up just one picture, or they're not putting a bio, or they're not really saying much about themselves. And I think for the apps to really work, you really have to put your true self out there. And again, like that's not about like doing something to flatter someone. It's just really putting out your authentic self so you can find someone who's actually a match and isn't going for what I think we were talking about this before, what you're trying to be, but actually who you actually are.
Okay, let's go back to the callers. This is Bob. And Bob, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, I have met, should I mention the name of the...
Sure, go ahead.
Match. I met a woman, and after several months of dating, we decided we'd live together. And we did that up until about a year, and decided to get married, and everything went wonderful. It was great. We got married, and next thing I knew, a couple months later, I had to go down to a friend's house to help him put a little addition over his porch at his house, and he invited us down for steaks and everything else, and she said, well, I'm busy today. I've got a lot of things I've got to do here.
Uh-huh.
Well, it turned out it was to move out, and so anyway, then she tried to.
So this, so divorce, so something went wrong in the relationship, Bob. It turned out that things got weird.
No, I don't think anything went wrong in the relationship. I think it was a pre-planned thing. I found out that the land that she had in Del Rio, which I'd helped her put a double wide on, I didn't help her. I did it, but anyway, she's trying to sell that land. And
so what's your takeaway? What's your takeaway? What are you telling us? To be
no
careful?
Now, be careful is a good idea.
All right, Bob, thank you for that call. Interesting story from Bob. Helen Fisher, you never know who you're going to meet. There are people out there looking for vulnerable individuals, I guess.
One of the beautiful things right now is something that I call slow love. More and more people are taking a lot of time to get into a relationship, and that's what I think was the problem with Bob. He didn't really get to know this woman. But a great many millennials are very slow now. What they're doing now, the new trend, newest trend, I call it slow love, fast sex slow love, actually. They'll be just friends for quite a long time. Then they'll move into friends with benefits. Then they'll slowly come out of that and have their official first date. And then they'll date, and then they will live together for quite a while before they marry. And a lot of people say, well, this is reckless. It's caution. This is caution. Today's singles want to get to know every single thing about somebody before they tie the knot. And actually, I think that's a very healthy new rising tradition of slow love. In fact, I did a study with Match. My assumption was that if you have a long period of courtship, you're going to make a more stable marriage. So I did a study of 1,100 married people and asked them a lot of questions, but one of them was, would you remarry the person you're currently married to? And 81% said yes. So I'm very positive right now about this new trend of slow love, this very long, careful sort of courtship in which you get to know a great deal about somebody before you wed.
So, Helen Fisher, since you are a chief scientific advisor for Match.com, what is the percentage of men and women on the site? I understand it's a lot more men than women.
You know, I don't really know. I think there's some more. Different sites are different. I think there's more women on Bumble. I think there may be more men on Match. A site that I started with the Match group was called chemistry.com. I think there's more women on that. And so I think that comes to a very important point. You've got to pick a site that you think is going to work for you. And if that site doesn't work for you, go to a different one because they are out there. I mean, the brain is built to love. You just got to find the right venue to meet the right people. And then you got to do the work to get out there and meet them yourself.
Right. And Ruben Thomas, sociologist at University of New Mexico, as different sites come up, they become very narrow focused, farmers only, gluten-free, religiously minded. Is that a good thing, or should we have the open system where we never know, opposites attract?
Well, it depends on what people are looking for. Though most of the couples that we see when we survey people on where they met, most of the couples who met online tend to meet through the big general interest sites, you know, like Match.com, though a significant minority also meet through these very specific sites that are either about a religious preference or a racial ethnic preference or a social class preference. But in general, I do find that the couples who meet online are more likely to be interracial than couples who meet offline. They're more likely to be of different religious backgrounds. They're more likely to have different educational degrees, but they are more similar to each other in age than couples who meet offline. So those larger pools of people that people are exposed to when they go searching for love online, it tends to produce more diversity in couples, whereas people meeting offline through the traditional ways tend to be more similar and segregated.
All right. Ruben Thomas, thank you so much. Sociologist at the University of New Mexico. We're also joined by Helen Fisher, an anthropologist and senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute and chief scientific advisor for Match.com. Jordana Abraham is a co-host of the Dating Advice podcast, You Up. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.